Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show.
Well, hello, and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America, where we're feeling spring. I think it's officially, summer, pardon me. I believe summer is officially tonight, although it has felt like it here since we tore off the page to June 1st, that thick humidity. But in any case, I'm still glad to see all of the color and glad we're not in winter, and I hope you guys are enjoying this change of season, having a good time. I know a lot of you are vacationing and getting out and about. We're not talking about COVID anymore, whether it's there or not. Everybody seems to have gone back to life as usual, so it's good. In fact, I just got an invitation to a 4th of July event, and I won't get on my horse about that now, but I'm in one of the cities that allows personal fireworks, and it sounds like Basra here for 10 days. 10 days. Last time I checked, July 4th was one day, the 4th of July. But for some reason, we allow them for 10 days, and it's something like 10 in the morning until 11 at night. So, of course, people do them at 9 in the morning until 1 in the morning. So every dog and person with PTSD in the neighborhood's kind of going a little crazy around that time. So not sure what we'll do for our July 5th show. But it might be a little more casual, I think. So, for those of you who are new around here, Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers, which takes a good bit of warrior. Again, I'm your host, Kim Justice. If you want to know more about me, check out my website, In a Flash. How quickly our lives can change, right? Inaflash.org. I'm happy to be able to have our guest tonight, Dr. Noah St. John. He is a coach, mentor, keynote speaker who spent tons of money and time with a variety of programs offered by personal growth leaders. And just like many others, the promised wealth wasn't forthcoming. Boy, do I know some of those stories. Today, he teaches people around the world how to transform old, dusty, quote-unquote, affirmations to his iconic affirmations method, how to take out their head trash so they can achieve their permission to succeed and develop peak performance habits that consistently produce life-changing results. In this, his 20th book, busy guy, The Seven-Figure Life, How to Leverage the Four Focus Factors for More Wealth and Happiness, Dr. Noah St. John reveals the four focus factors that undermine entrepreneurs' success if not properly leveraged. He's become one of the most respected guides to successful entrepreneurship and peak performance with endorsements from all kinds of people that you've heard of before, Stephen Covey, Jack Canfield, Harvey McKay, Neil Donald Walsh, and quite a few others here. You can read about it in the program notes, where I also always have the website. His website is noahstjohn.com, noahstjohn.com. He might have another site for us, but that was the first one that was sent to me. So those of you who are regulars know that the website is always in the program notes. Those of you who don't now do know. If you want to look up Noah after you hear our talk tonight, most of you know where to find me, or just go to the program notes for tonight. One of the reasons I wanted to have Noah here with us tonight is we're not necessarily the Fortune 500, not that there aren't some listening, but as a demographic, many of us were, and then our brain injuries circumvented our plans and goals that we had laid out and where we thought we'd be going, and we had to start over. And no clue how to do that, because we only knew how to do what we knew how to do. And so that tweener stage ate some of us alive. And for the rest of us, we found what I call the lantern keepers, of which Dr. Noah is one, to help us find how to move forward in our life, to create a life worth living and happiness, as well as an income. That's a nice thing too. But changes in our attitude and our perception of what success is and the map to how to get there. So with that, I'm going to bring on Dr. Noah. One moment. How you doing tonight? Welcome to the show. Thanks so much for being on, Dr. St. John.
Well, it is a pleasure to be here, Kim. A pleasure.
Well, tell us a little bit. I think one of the things you and I discussed before is, and it makes it even more relatable, I think, to a lot of our audience, is a little bit of your background story in how you got to, I mean, unless somebody is a trust fund baby, they don't usually wake up on a track running directly to success. There's a lot of hard work that goes into it, planning, researching, just sweat equity to get into something. So tell us a little bit about where and how you started, and then the impetus to make you move the direction you've chosen to go.
Well, to give you a little bit of my backstory and where I came from and how I got here, I grew up poor in a rich neighborhood. And I know that's a total cliche, but it's totally true. I grew up in this little town called Kennebunkport, Maine, which is one of the wealthiest communities in New England. But my family was dirt my family was dirt poor, and I mean that literally, because we lived at the bottom of a dirt road in a drafty, unfinished home that my parents actually ended up losing to foreclosure when I was just 15 years old. So anyone who's ever been through foreclosure or knows someone who has knows that's a very traumatic experience, especially for children. And so from a very young age, I was painfully exposed to the gap, the chasm between the haves and the have-nots. The haves was everyone else in the community. The have-nots was my family. And so, you know, you hear, a lot of times you hear, you'll hear speakers, maybe motivational speakers or something, they'll get on stage and you'll hear them say something like this: well, we were poor, but we were happy. We didn't know we were poor. Well, I'll tell you what, in my family, we knew we were poor because my mother, bless her heart, reminded us every day that we were poor and miserable. So no, it wasn't happy at all. It was decidedly unhappy. And so from a very young age, I really hated being poor. I hated that life of poverty and fear, lack, not enoughness. That's what I grew up with. But I saw that right down the street, there's great wealth and abundance. So I was always saying, how the heck do I get from here to there? You know, and of course, there was no one to help me back then. It was long before the internet or, you know, coaching or anything like that. I mean, I was far too young to even know what those things were. So I did the only thing that I could think to do, and I went to the library and started reading books. I read lots and lots of books on self-help, personal growth, the classics like Dale Carnegie, Napoleon Hill, Stephen Covey, all the classics that so many other people, you know, have enjoyed over the years. And I really, you know, I immersed myself in those books and read them and studied them, and I really, really tried to make them work. But as hard as I worked, as hard as I tried, I just couldn't seem to get them to work. And so after many years of, you know, study, hard work, and not seeing really any results, at the age of 25, I was so depressed and frustrated and broke, I said, you know what, I don't want to be here anymore. And I decided to take my own life. I decided to commit suicide and went to do it. At the last moment, when I was about to take my own life, my life was spared. Now, I didn't know why. I didn't know why I was still here, why my life was spared, but I knew that I had to find a reason, that I had to find my purpose here on the earth, because I didn't know why I was here. I didn't know my purpose. And so I did something that I was used to doing. I went back to the library. I started reading more books, but this time more spiritual, more of an inner journey. The first journey that I took was more of an outer journey to try to get outer success, which I totally failed.
How to.
And so, exactly. And so, and this one was an inner journey, reading lots of spiritual books by people like Ernest Holmes, Marianne Williamson, Louise Hay, Deepak Chopra, Neil Donald Walsh, people like that, the spiritual thinkers of our time. And I immersed myself in those books and those learnings and those teachings. And then fast forward 5 years later, after I decided to commit suicide, in 1997, I finally found my purpose. I discovered that there were things that were missing in the traditional success literature that I'd spent all those years reading, because they all say pretty much the same thing. And I realized they were missing. They were missing some key elements that I finally figured out. And so in April of 1997, I had, you know, this realization, this epiphany, and that is what led to me starting my company, which is called successclinic.com. It's still the name successclinic.com all these years later, but I started in a 300 square foot basement apartment with $800 and a book on HTML. I had nothing. I had no money. I had no marketing, no sales, no business skills of any kind. There was very, very little in terms of tools or resources. But I had one thing, which is what kept me going, and I had a deep burning desire to help people and to make a difference, to, as Steve Jobs put it, to put a dent in the universe. And so I kept going. I kept plugging away. I invested the money that I would make. I just put it right back in my own education to try to learn how to run a business, how to be successful, and how to help people. And, you know, in that, now in the intervening 25 plus years, we've helped well over 2 million people all around the world, 140 countries. We've helped people to add six figures, seven figures, even eight figures to their businesses, their careers. We've also helped people to have more time with their families, to be able to take fun vacations that they remember for a lifetime. Also help people to lose weight and find their purpose when they had lost it, similar to what I had gone through. So it's really been an amazing journey, something that I never expected to happen, but that's my story, and you know, that's how I got here, and you know, that's the work that I'm privileged to be able to do today.
Well, I got a couple questions. Thank you for sharing that. Do you know why your parents chose to live in an unfinished house in an obviously very wealthy neighborhood? And not, what was their feeling or thinking? I've been to Maine, beautiful state. There must be other cities and places. Did they have a natural entree into that situation?
Yes, it's a very fascinating. It's a very fascinating story. My father, I was born in New Jersey, and my dad had a job working in New York at a bank, and he was, you know, had a well-paying job, and he was, you know, providing for our family. But he had a dream, which was to be in the theater. He always wanted to be in the theater. In fact, that's where he met my mother. They met at Catholic University Theater Department. So by both my mother and father are actors, singers, performers. You know, they've always done that. So I grew up in that type of a household where we were always listening to Broadway shows and things like that on records. And so my father got a job offer to be the director of a summer theater in Kennebunkport, Maine. And this was while we were still living in, you know, New Jersey, New York. And so my father, and this is a wonderful story in my family's lore, my father came home one day and said, "Honey, I quit my job and we're going to move to Maine." And of course, my mother, you can imagine how she took that news. "Let's see, you're going to quit your well-paying job that is feeding our family, and we're going to where?" "And they're going to do what?" So that didn't go over so well. But, you know, my mother was a trooper, and she followed my dad. And, you know, it was the two of us at the time, my brother and I, my sister came along later. But we moved the family up to Maine, and, you know, he really didn't have any money, my dad. So we just rented, you know, we would just find different apartments and sometimes homes that we would rent. And then finally he said, "Well, you know, I need to have a home for my growing family." And my dad is just an amazingly talented designer, artist, engineer, self-taught. He never went to college for that. He was a theater major. But he literally, and I don't know how the heck he did this, he literally created the designs for our home, the blueprints, as if he had gone to architectural school, which he did not. How he figured it out, I'll never know. I've asked him, how did you do that? He goes, I don't know. I just figured it out. I'm like, that is amazing. And so he built this home pretty much from the ground up with his bare hands. I mean, I was only about, 5 years old at the time, so there wasn't much I could do. I mean, there's pictures of me. I was stirring the cement, and there's not much a five-year-old boy can do in terms of building a house. But he definitely put us to work, I'll tell you that. My brother and I, we would just work all the time. And, it was but we had fun, I guess, at the time. We didn't know any different. We didn't know any better. So the point is, the problem was my dad was never able to finish the house. He ran out of money. And so, he went to the bank and he, tried to say, hey, can we stay? And they said, well, we like the thing called money. So no. they said, no, that's, you're a charming guy, but charm doesn't pay the bills. And so unfortunately, they did foreclose and that was that. So, it was about 10 years of living in that home. I mean, that's, what I certainly call my childhood home because, I actually wrote it down one time. I ended up moving about 26 times before I was 18. Huh. Which is amazing. And that was just because my father, my parents were just trying to find a place to live as we were moving here and there. So it was something, but yeah, that's how it all happened. And it's a really fascinating story.
Well, it is because he went from being a successful banker in the financial services field and left for his passion, and we know the term starving artists on every level. And that's interesting because, many people, it'd be neat if we could, and maybe you talk about that, chase our passion. It seems like it's got to be one or the other, like in his case. He stayed and he did a job he was capable of doing in New Jersey that generated a lot of income, but apparently it didn't feed his spirit. And he chased his passion to Maine. And for that, there was sacrifice not only for him, but obviously for you kids, for the family. Good thing you were really young when that shift happened. It might have been even a little more difficult. I don't know if it would have been easier or more difficult if you were older to understand why someone would leave trappings to go to, following their higher self, I guess, if you will, if that's something that your mom and he enjoyed and they like to perform, then that is interesting that he took that leap. Well, not a lot of people have the guts to do it, and then they can't live through it financially.
That is something I've always admired about my father, is he did pursue his passions. They didn't always work out. But no one could ever accuse him of not working hard and following his dream. And actually, that's something that I did. And I ended up following sort of in his footsteps in the sense that I followed my passion, my dream, when it didn't make any sense. That's why I found myself in Los Angeles in my early 20s, because I was pursuing my dream of being an actor, going to Hollywood, being in movies and television shows. Hollywood, unfortunately, yes. The problem was Hollywood was underwhelmed by my performances. So they didn't exactly embrace my unique skills and talents. Boy, were they dumb. But anyway, so, that was something that I did. And I, now, in all fairness, I did not have a family. I didn't have a wife or kids. It was my early 20s, so I figured, if I'm going to be taking risks, this is a great time to do it. Before you have a wife, before you have kids, you have a mortgage, you have responsibilities. And so I did do that. And,
Good choice.
Didn't work out for me either. But now what's nice is, and my father, you know, would agree with me, that what's really great is, one of the things that I've noticed about life is that the pain of fear weighs pounds, but the pain of regret weighs tons. And so the one thing that I never wanted to experience, go through, was, oh, if only I would have followed my dream. You know, oh, I could have been a movie star if I would have just done it. Well, now I can sit here, you know, all those years later and say, no, not really. No, I couldn't, because I tried and I wasn't very good. But see, at least I tried. I did it. And, you know, no one can take away that experience. So for the listener, what I would encourage you to do is, you know, are you at a point in your life where are you following your dreams? Are you pursuing your passion? What I've been able to do now, and you mentioned this in your opening, Kim, what I've been able to do for the last 25 years is help people to do that very thing, pursue their passion, live their dream, and what's also wonderful is make really good money doing it. That's the one thing my father never was able to do, unfortunately. He pursued his passion, he followed his dream, but he really never was able to make good money doing it. And, you know, that's true, of course, for a lot of people. You know, they find that, oh, gosh, you know, this is a lot harder than I thought. And especially when you're trying to do it alone, when you're trying to figure it out by yourself, sometimes it can be a lonely road. And so that's one of the things that I do now and I'm able to do and privileged to do is I get to coach people, whether it's one-on-one coaching or group coaching or even in my books and online courses that we have. And I'm able to really help people, number one, find what their passion is. Many people have lost their passion. Many people are saying, gosh, I don't know what I want to do with the rest of my life. I mean, they could be in their 20s or 30s. They could be in their 50s and 60s and saying that. And, you know, of course, we're living longer lives. You know, we're living well into our 80s and 90s and beyond. And, you know, retirement certainly isn't what it used to be. And we're, you know, living these longer lives and saying, gosh, what do I want to do with the rest of my life? And so, you know, I'm able to help people take the knowledge, skills, and experiences that they've accumulated over their lifetime and be able to package it in a certain way. Maybe it's a book, maybe it's an online course, maybe it's, you know, different programs or different packages. And then they're able, what's amazing and wonderful, is they're able to help others through their experience. You know, like, so the pain that I went through, you know, my part of a big part of my mission is to help others not have to go through the pain and the torment and the suffering that I had to go through, you know, to reach my goals. It took me so much longer than I would have liked because I really didn't have any help. I didn't have anyone to help me. That's why it took a lot longer than I would have liked. But now, you know, because of that experience, I'm able to help others, you know, whether it's through one-on-one coaching or group coaching or even, you know, helping people get their books done. Like, for example, right now I'm working with a stem cell doctor in Nashville, and he hired me to create his book because he told me when we first spoke, he said, you know, no, I've been really, you know, I've been following you and I've been reading your books and, you know, getting your online programs and I, you know, I love what you're doing. And he said, you know, I've had a dream to write a book for over 10 years. I've had the book rattling around my head for over 10 years. And I said, well, you know, first of all, I hear that a lot. It's very common. A lot of people tell me that. And, you know, he told me his dream and, you know, he told me about the book and everything. Well, after having it rattle around in his head for over 10 years, we got it done for him in 8 weeks. 8 weeks versus 10 years. So that is what, you know, can happen when you get the help, when you get real help from someone who has done it and knows what they're doing and can help you get there much, much faster than doing it alone.
I was going to say, at the, you know, you writing 20 books, and not to compare in that way, but the two, and they're short, they're not that long, but the two books I've written, it was like that. I listened to people say that they've been working on their book for 10 years or whatever, and I was like, God, I couldn't keep my attention there for 10 years to work on it. But I will say it's a little different. The first two, I made a decision. You know, you talk about it was rolling around in their head for a certain amount of time and pondering the ideas and thinking about it. For me, it was making a decision. And then I sat down as if it was an exorcism and just wrote it from beginning to end. Now, not in the shape it was released, but a beginning, middle, and an end, you know, the track of the whole thing, just zzz, right through it. And it was probably about that 8 weeks, you know. And in the next one, it was very similar, but both of those were based on my own experiences, two totally different books, but based on my own experience. So it's me telling a story. Now, this book that I'm working on now, that I'm partway through, and we'll maybe have to talk about it off air, a couple of different things happened. I had to stop back in October and break my groove, if you will. I had to stop for a death in the family and stop for some eye surgery and things that took it from on hot on the front burner for six, a forward of contents and six chapters. And then boom, life hit hard, you know, from a lot of different directions. And suddenly it was on a back burner off, although not out of my head, you know, because I, again, there's kind of a beginning, middle, and end, but I wrote it differently because this book that I'm writing now is nonfiction and it's not my personal experience. It's not me telling a story except that I'm telling about history, the history of the evolution of mental illness from about 1820 up to current, which is a pretty long period of time. But there, you know, from practices, the way that they handled it, treated it, if you will, and the changes, the excuses, why a lot of things are worse today than they were in 1820, which isn't funny.
No.
But we've gone through different treatment models. And one of the things that's always gotten in the way is politics and social stigma. And so I've done a ton of research, and I've got my ton of research there, and there were some integral characters through that history that come up that I wrote about, and a couple that are alive, believe it or not, that I spent hours interviewing, one that went through one of the pretty nasty treatments before the advent of drugs. And now what we're in is the big pharma phase of treatment. Before that, we did things that had to do with restraint and isolation to try to manage people. And then we moved to big pharma, cheaper, you could push more of it, spend less time with the patient, you know, than before, and we're still stuck here. And when you talk about some of the things that you talk about, your Marianne Williamson and some of those people that you read later that impacted you, I won't say that that's exactly it, but it is interesting because, you know, the treatment model I'd like to see come next would be one of cognitive behavior treatment, not chemical,
right.
Because cognitive behavior treatment and spirituality, like you were talking about, are the great healers that actually address the problem. They don't mask the problem. So there's nothing curative in what's going on right now. It just keeps the money pumping and the wheels going, throwing stuff at symptoms and not at the causal factors. No money, no time, underfunded, overstaffed, overcrowded. And it's interesting because that excuse is the same excuse from the early 1800s. So I don't mean to give the whole thing away, but to me, as much as they're talking about it more now and making a big deal of the fact, and I started writing this book before people were talking about it so much in the last 6 months. You know, they're talking about it on TV all the time. But they weren't doing that when I started writing my book and the stuff that I have there. And I think I listen to the things that they're saying and I say, wow. Like, have you read back in history on this topic at all? Because, you know, it seems not as complex. Well, and a lot of it's just eyewash and politics to lay out a plan. And then the trick is they don't fund it. So for the photo ops and the articles and all of that stuff, it sounds like a good, solid plan, and it puts people at bay that... okay, you know, it's really not my problem directly. And now that I've read this article that says our governor is doing this, you know, I can just go on with my life and feel good about the fact that, you know, something is being done to remedy the situation. And you go a little further and read into the topic and find out that, yeah, this plan was drawn out and made, but it was never funded. No attempt was made. Attempt was made at a way to fund it, nor is there going to be any attempt made to fund it. And the answer is to me, not simple, but the answer is in what I said the problem was, underfunded, understaffed, overcrowded. If those are the problems, then those are the answers. And so what you do is go to every politician and say, what do you plan to do about this? And if they don't do it in their first term, they don't have a second term. You know, and you've got to have a easy enough, you know, just boom, boom, boom. Because it's, you know, shameful that we would allow this to go on for so long without finding a solution. And mostly it's because, you know, a lot of people don't think that has anything to do with them, but it does. Mm-hmm. And the more it's in our face, you know, now instead of being hidden away in buildings far, far away where people could easily, you know, be in denial or not care or whatever. You know, now when it's a tent city in front of your face and you've got to step over people to get to work, you know, that's a call for social change. You know, that's even worse, like I say, than the 1800s because it's in your face. It's not hidden away. And if you've got the spirit, the soul, that can be okay with you. To just say, oh, well, this is just the way it is, and be on the cell phone with one hand and your cappuccino in the other and just step over the people laying on the sidewalk shooting up, you know, that's a problem a societal problem, you know, that takes a societal solution. So anyway, I'm trying to raise a collective voice. So I do have all of the material, but I'm hoping now that a lot of these other things I mentioned that stop me dead in my tracks, that in the next 30 days or so I can recommit and go back to working on it, because it really has been fascinating and something different. You know, I've written a book before, but this is a completely different ball game. All of the homework and the reading and studying. I didn't have to study for the stories I told before, you know, and go back and get the kind of information that I did. But I know you've got an early morning meeting, but can you tell us, I made a distinction in your opening, I think we should at least address, everybody knows, or maybe they don't, an affirmation is something positive. You get an affirmation, and that's something that's good. Somebody tells you you did a good job, or you do your own self-affirmations. I'm worth it, in the mirror, however you do affirmations. But you made a twist on the word and registered it, affirmations. My husband thought I made a typo. And so as people are reading this, I thought we'd make it a point to just clarify what that is, so that this is Brain Injury Radio. I don't want to be accused of making a typo on your trademark.
Well, you are absolutely right. I invented a new word, in fact, a brand new word and a new methodology that has actually transformed well over 2 million lives over the last 25 years since I discovered it. So I'm sure most people listening to the program know what an affirmation is. If you've ever read a self-help book, you know that an affirmation is something we've been taught for well over a century, and it is a statement of something that you want to be true. So all of the, you know, old-style gurus, they taught this, and they're still teaching it to this day. That if you want to change your life, you change the statements that you say. So, for example, you would say something like, you know, like I'm actually a keynote speaker as well as, you know, as a business coach, an executive coach, and a mental health coach. I'm also a keynote speaker. I get to speak to companies, teams, organizations all around the world. And one of the things that I like to do is say to my audience members, all right, we're going to say an affirmation just like they taught us. All right. Now, everybody say, I am rich. And everybody goes, I am rich. And you know what happens next? Everyone starts laughing. And I go, what are you laughing at? They say, well, I'm not rich. And I say, but you just said you were. And they go, yeah, but I don't believe it. See, now, isn't that funny? Because isn't that the problem with the old way that we've been taught? You say these positive statements and you're supposed to believe them, but most of the time we just don't believe it. In fact, a study was done on this very topic, a scientific study, which showed that 75% of the people that use the old affirmation method actually end up more frustrated than before. So imagine if you had a phone that didn't work 3 out of the 4 times that you tried to use it. You'd probably get a new phone, wouldn't you? Well, that's what I did. Yeah. I invented a new phone. I invented a new way to actually change your brain and change your beliefs. So in April of 1997, I was actually in the shower thinking about this very thing. And I call it, in my books and my coaching programs, the shower that changed everything. Isn't that a great title? The shower that changed everything. And I'm sure most people have had those aha moments in the bathtub or the shower, you know, for some reason water is always involved. But we have those eureka moments, the aha moments. Well, that's what happened to me in April of 1997, over 25 years ago now, 26 years now. And I realized that we have been taught to use these statements, I'm happy, I'm rich, I'm successful, And inside, for most people, your brain goes, no, you're not. And so I said, well, wait a minute. The human mind actually responds to something much more powerful and profound than statements, because it responds automatically to questions. And I said, why are we going around making statements we don't believe when the human mind responds automatically to questions? And I said, well, what would that look like? Well, let's see. Let's say you have the statement, I am rich. And your brain goes, yeah, right. We don't believe it. I said, if that's the statement, well, what would the question be? And then I said, why am I so rich? Why am I so rich? Now, when you ask that question, what instantly starts to happen in your mind? Well, what happens is your mind starts to search for the answer. And I said, that's very interesting. And I said, what if, instead of making statements we don't believe, we cut out the middleman and go right to the question, which is 10 times more powerful anyway? And that's when I said, I think I just invented something. And that's when I had to give it a name. And the name that I gave it was Affirmations. And for everybody listening, you can actually go to affirmations.com, Affirmations with an O. So if you're used to spelling it Affirmations, you just put the O there where the I was, Affirmations.com. And you can learn about my Affirmations method. And so the point is that I had this discovery, epiphany, many years ago, over 26 years ago now. And since that time, I have taught my Affirmations method to over 2 million people all around the world, and it has changed their lives in very profound ways, helping people make more money, find their dream job, get promotions, lose weight, find love, save marriages. We've also helped kids. Kids love Affirmations. For those of you listening who have, you know, sons and daughters, nieces and nephews, grandkids and granddaughters, grandsons, teach your kids Affirmations. Tell them to go to Affirmations.com and learn more about my Affirmations method, because we've had kids who have used my Affirmations method to get better grades, improve their self-esteem, have better self-confidence. We've helped high school kids, grammar school kids, college-age kids to literally change their lives by changing the questions that they're asking using my Affirmations method.
Excellent. So you're changing the form. That was one thing I thought of when I heard the word is an affirmation, you know, that we kind of hear about that in therapy 101, so we can feel better about ourselves, you know, doing the basic affirmations. And to me, when I looked at affirmation, and I encourage you to go to his website and see what he means, but pick up his book and take a look at it. Because I realize a lot of us are starting over here or looking for a new path. Maybe you were on a path that you thought either that you didn't like or you did like, and you envisioned yourself being there toward the end, and then your life got interrupted by your brain injury or some other life-changing event, and you're being forced to change. To me, when I looked at formation, that was an action word. And you say it's the questions, but the questions must lead to action, where the basic affirmations just seemed useful but kind of fluffy, you know, there were soft fuzzies kind of, but not a form of action. And that's really what you're doing with your coaching and your books and your courses, is supporting people in taking action. As you said, a lot of times people don't know what they want to be when they grow up or after they've had a game-changing event in their life or whatever the circumstance might be, the not knowing which way to go without support and good orderly direction. And it appears that that is your goal through your books and your seminars and your coaching and so forth, is to help people form plans of action and support them in doing that to reach the goals that some don't even know they have yet, but to help them dig out those goals and then be able to make the action happen to get there.
That's exactly right.
Which,
and when you go to our website, you'll see so many stories and case studies and examples of people who have used my methodologies to literally change their lives very, very quickly. One of the things that I love about this is that it happens fast. You don't have to wait months or years. We see incredible transformations in a matter of days or weeks. I'll give you a quick example. I was working with one entrepreneur in Arizona who was a self-proclaimed seminar junkie. And she'd been to all the seminars out there, all the self-help gurus, and she was doing okay in her business. You know, she was doing well, but she kept hitting an income ceiling. No matter how hard she worked, she just couldn't break through that ceiling. And she'd spent lots of time, lots of money, and lots of effort trying to break through that ceiling, but nothing ever worked. And then a friend referred her to me, recommended me to her, and she joined one of our group coaching programs, which is called the 12-Week Breakthrough, which is where I help people make more in just 12 weeks than they did in the past 12 months while actually winning back their lives. Well, as I was coaching her, she started to see where all of these other programs were really missing a lot of key information, the gaps that I filled in with my work 25 years ago, and I've been teaching for all these years. So she took action. She really was able to do these things and put them in place very quickly. Well, she tripled her investment in just 2 weeks. In the first 2 weeks of us working together, she tripled her investment. And talk about getting a return on your investment, right? She tripled. Imagine, where else can you go? I mean, you can't put it in the bank and triple it in 2 weeks. You can't put it on Wall Street. Good luck with that, you know. So she got an incredible return on her investment in a very short amount of time. And we have lots and lots of examples like that. And that's one of the things that's so rewarding, is to see people's lives transform just by putting these simple things in place in a very short amount of time.
And that helps, because a lot of people don't have the attention span or the patience to invest in a longer time like that. You know, a lot of talk about colleges and things these days and, you know, working hard to get a degree and then you can never find the job that makes enough to pay off your student loan. So a lot of things have changed since we were younger, you know, and that you could do that, you know. So I think there's even more need now, even though you've been doing this for 25 years, for more innovative solutions. I think, you know, you're even now more coming into a place with more people that are looking to make a change. You know, COVID changed a lot of things. People started working from home. We didn't hear that kind of thing before. A lot of people left their jobs for a variety of reasons, were forced out of their jobs in some ways. And also just the damage that was done, all of the loss. I think it got people thinking more about that our lifetime and the human existence isn't infinite. And if there's something that we want to do to find that passion now, you know, now that we've seen something in 3 years that can wipe out so many people or disable so many people, and it can happen that fast to everybody who thought it can never happen to me, or that things only happen to old people, we found out that was fallacious. That simply wasn't true. And so there's no time like the present. If you're thinking of making these changes, I think people are more open and receptive to doing it, because the opportunity isn't forever open to put things off the way we might have used to before. I'll do that later.
I agree.
I'll do that later. You know, so
yes, I agree.
Good timing. Well, I appreciate you being here tonight and sharing your experience, strength, and hope with us. I hope you'll come back again sometime and that we can talk off air, maybe a little bit about my book sometime. Like I said, I'll be getting back to it. And in the meantime, mm-hmm. I encourage everybody to check out those websites. And I think NoahSt.John.com has links to a lot of your other websites. But in any case, do you want to rattle off the other couple real quick before you go? Success and affirmations.com. Make sure I get them.
Yes.
All right.
Absolutely.
Because I've just got NoahSt.John.com on here. So.
Yeah. Well, if you go to breakthroughwithnoah.com, it's very easy to remember, right? So we help people get breakthroughs. So all you have to do is go to breakthroughwithnoah.com, and you can watch an 11-minute video training that I did on how I help people, you know, really get breakthroughs in their lives, their careers, their businesses, their relationships, their health in a very, very short amount of time. And then you can also schedule a breakthrough consultation with either me or one of my coaches at breakthroughwithnoah.com. And also, yes, if you want to learn more about our other programs, just go to shopnoahstjohn.com, like shop, like you're going shopping, shopnoahstjohn.com. You can see our different programs, whether it's one-on-one coaching or group coaching or our online courses or even my different books. I have over 20 now. All of that at shopnoahstjohn.com.
Great. Well, that's a word I'm familiar with. I'll remember that one.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. I know you have an early meeting, so I will let you get off and get some sleep so you're fresh for your meeting in the morning. But I appreciate you taking the time to come and share with us tonight. A very hopeful message that if he can do it, audience, then you can probably do it too. When people have done it, they're often very gracious about helping others do it. There's not a competitive thing, jealousy thing, you know. The most successful people are willing to share it with others that are wanting to go that same direction. So if you're aspiring to do something different, this just may be the place for you to start. Get some help and some ideas and make that happen. So thank you, NoahSt.John.
My pleasure. All right, Kim, well, have a great night, and I look forward to talking with all the folks who are going to come and check us out, and we'll take great care of you. All right, well, we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much. Good night. Well, everybody, that was Dr. NoahSt.John, so make sure to check him out Again, I've got noahstjohn.com. He gave you several others, I think, on his main, at least it should be, on his main website, that it would steer you to the rest of those sites. And I'm sure that Amazon has all of his books too. But in any case, what I think we'll do now is the number for call-in, and that's what we'll be doing. If anyone chooses to call in, I'm going to spend the second hour playing some music and having some call-in. Been a while since we've done that. So if anyone would like to call in and talk about anything, whether is our guest tonight or something that you have on your mind, the number is 424-243-9540. Again, 424-243-9540. And again, I invite you to call in. I'm going to play a song to freshen my drink and come back. And I think, what will it be tonight? I think I'm going to play Chris Dukes, D-U-K-E-S, Chris Dukes. You can find his music at chrisdukes.com, at least you used to be able to. I'm sure you can find him on YouTube as well. This song is called Reasons, and I'll be right back. Thanks.
And the more that it rolls, I lose more layers in sight. Here comes a breakdown, that's just what I need. Another shot in the dark, open monster feet. Is there an answer? Is there a way? Keep falling down. I have a tight to this moment, and I have a reason to make amends to hold a man. Another swing miss, another try to fail. I can only prep for my life. All that I am, I'm a pin rock to a deafening ring, and it bores you ahead.
There are some reasons.
That was Chris Dukes, everyone. And he's got a lot of great music from the East Coast. I'm going to talk a little bit. Dr. St. John talked a little bit about psychological and emotional changes, not specifically after brain injury, but I think I'm going to talk about that. You're still invited to call in, 1-800. I didn't just say that. 424-243-9540. 424-243-9540. This is a little information on what it's like to have a traumatic brain injury. Based on severity and injury mechanism, there are three classifications of TBI. Mild traumatic brain injury, which I hate that description. The person is conscious with eyes open. Symptoms of mild TBI include brief loss of consciousness, confusion, disorientation, memory loss, and headache. I tell you, for the people that have those things, it's obviously a person who didn't know a lot about brain injury that made a category called mild, because if you're living that day after day, to you, it ain't mild. But anyway, that's the first one. Moderate traumatic brain injury. A person with a moderate traumatic brain injury, lethargic and opens eyes to stimulation. They can lose consciousness that lasts between 20 minutes to 6 hours. Sleepiness is caused by some brain swelling or bleeding, but is still arousable. And severe TBI is people who are unconscious. Even with stimulation, their eyes don't open. They are unconscious for more than 6 hours. So, basically, where you're going to find articles like this, no matter where you find them, they're going to break down mild, moderate, severe, and it's going to have something to do with the time a person was unconscious. Concussion, a traumatic brain injury. I think we've all learned now, and if a few of you out there haven't, a concussion is now considered a traumatic brain injury. They consider it a mild traumatic brain injury, but it happens when the head experiences a blow, bump, hit, or jolt that makes it move back and forth rapidly. That can also be described in a lot of ways like a whiplash concussion. You don't have to be in a car crash to get whiplash. When your head neck snaps and your head snaps, your brain is suspended in fluid inside of a thorny cage, and so your brain does a coup contra coup. It smacks the front, bounces to the back, smacks to the front, bounces to the back. That can cause contusions or worse. I've got a good diagram of that, although probably not on these program notes. So, head injury can cause mental illness. If you suffer a head trauma, your risk of developing certain mental disorders increases significantly, in some cases by more than 400%, a new study reveals. And this is from Science Nordic. Yes. It's Danish. Danish scientists have studied the link between head trauma, such as concussion and skull fracture, and the subsequent risk of developing mental disorders. They found that head injuries can cause the risk of developing certain mental disorders up to 439%. I'm quite surprised by our findings. I had expected to see a correlation, but it's much stronger than I had expected, says Dr. Sonia Orlovsky, MD, of the Psychiatric Center in Copenhagen. I see that we do have a caller, so I can go ahead and take that call. Caller, hang on 1 second, and I will just read this last paragraph, and then I'll be able to transition over to you. So, she is the lead author of the new study published in the American Journal of Psychiatry. This is the largest study to date of its kind. It's a national register study based on all Danes born between 1977 and 2000, totaling 1.4 million people who were followed up 2010. In this period, 113,906 of them had been admitted to the hospital with a head injury. 4% of these were subsequently diagnosed with a mental disorder. The researchers looked at the following disorders: depression, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and so-called organic mental disorders, a form of decreased mental function due to a medical or physical disease rather than a psychiatric illness. By comparing the injured people's risk of developing the disorders with the rest of the study population, they found that those with head injuries were 65% more likely to be diagnosed with schizophrenia, 59% more likely to develop depression, 28% more likely to be diagnosed with bipolar, and 439% more likely to suffer from organic mental disorders. And again, an organic mental disorder, I'm going to repeat that again since the number was so high, a form of decreased mental function due to a medical or physical disease rather than a psychiatric illness. So that means perhaps cognitive problems, depression associated with cognitive or executive function, the things that come from a medical or physical disease, like a brain injury, either a brain injury like many of us have had, or it goes on to be a degenerative brain issue. Those are things that can affect mental function. So, again, she says she's very surprised at the correlation, or not surprised at the correlation, but blown away by the numbers being as high as they are. So, if you've ever wondered, after you had your brain injury, if you feel a little more depressed, if you feel quicker to fly off the handle, maybe didn't have a temper before and you've got one now, maybe had a temper and you've got a flat affect now where you don't really feel much of anything. You think feelings, you don't experience feelings. Things like that can definitely be as a result of our brain injuries. So with that, I think I will take the caller and see what, if anything, they have to say.
First of all, is hello, Kim.
Les Paul. And I thought it was you. I was hoping it was.
I am just happy to be listening to you tonight while I was driving first. And then when I got home, I was listening to you on your network on the internet. And so when I got home, I picked up on the phone and just called and said, you know, I can't hold off anymore. I'm doing fine, but you're talking about the state of, you know, it's almost the state of America right now. It feels like the world's gone crazy around us, and yet people with disabilities and brain injuries, maybe we're here to save it. You know what I mean? Despite all the different things you just mentioned. Gosh, I should apply to all of those with all the brain operations I've had. And yet I'm still here and running. I don't know why or how.
Well, not ours to know, I guess, until we're told later on. But it is interesting. I've just had some people asking about it lately, and I've observed some people that, and I'm not making a, trying not to make a judgment. Maybe it sounds like it, maybe it is. But I know myself, and I know that I was impacted with, a form of PTSD, anxiety, and more problems fighting depression after my brain injury for a variety of reasons. I do know that through, you know, things that places like yours talk about, although that wasn't where I got them, but it took a lot of work to break that cycle of that injury because, you know, you don't know if you're on foot or horseback, and a lot of times we don't realize that we've had this personality change or a shift, you know, in our mood being disordered from time to time or more of the time, you know, it depends on the person. But it does take work to be aware that that's going on and then to have a willingness, because you and I have both known people stuck in that groove who stayed there. They have not wanted to admit that there was anything wrong with them. It was you. It's about you. Everything's wrong with you or them or they, you know, or somebody else's fault, you know, not wanting to take responsibility. And I heard somebody, you know, use their brain injury as an excuse the other day for an anger issue. And, you know, I tried to nicely say, you know, we all are. That person did seem like they were out of line and you addressed it. But what I found for me is that if somebody's going haywire angry and I go haywire angry back, the point is lost because it becomes a battle of the tempers. And so you lose. Sure. I was just going to say, so you lose the point and nothing gets accomplished. So learning things like emotion regulation and going through cognitive behavior courses and really working on how to address these changes, I don't think it's enough to make the excuse for ourselves that I had this happen, so that's why I'm a jerk now. I think once you realize you're a jerk now, if you do, it's incumbent on you to use whatever tools you can find to try to help mitigate that, to not be as much of a jerk, and maybe not be a jerk at all.
Exactly.
Now it's over to you.
Well, the part I wanted to share is because you hit the nail on the head when you said that a minute ago. I've got a friend, and he's a brain injury survivor. He's been through multiple traumas, and it's amazing he's alive. But now that he's been in recovery, when I see him, even when he's cutting up or being very serious, it's always, but man, it's not my fault. I've got a brain injury. I said, don't use that as a statement because people are listening because they're hearing like, oh, there's a cop-out. I have a brain injury. When some people, their brain injury really is doing that because when you're new to brain injury, especially, you might act out in ways, or things may show, or traumas may show. But this person has been in a long recovery, has been through rehabilitation, has gone to brain injury specialist, and he knows better, but he'll start saying, "Oh, man, Les Paul, you know it's my brain injury." I said, "But you're a person first, not a disability. You need to think about the words you use, because you know, other people with brain injuries are going to hear that and think, well, what's the purpose of me learning or trying if that's all there is?" And so he's changed his way after me talking to him several times like this. And so,
well,
what
that's
you were saying,
good that you did, because it gives us all a bad name, you know?
It does.
It's like why they won't hire people for jobs, you know, if they think that we're
exactly
unstable people, then that's not good for the whole of us. Right, right. Yeah, that's why I think we all have a responsibility always to clean our side of the porch the best we can for ourselves and our own happiness and the goodness of the relationships around us that we like to have, quality relationships around us, and not have everyone run when they see us, you know, hide under the desk. Oh, God, here they come. You know, we don't want that to happen, but we also don't want to put the perception out there that that's just, you know, brain injury equals that, because most people don't know
good news
a lot about
you about that.
What?
Today I went to a place called Fort Gordon. It's one of the largest military bases in the United States, first of all, but it's in the southeast at least. It's called Fort Gordon. It's a very, very large military base. And we went as staff at Walton Office, three of us, and I was one of them. And we went and did presentations. They were doing a special, looking for job seekers or looking for careers for the soldiers that are getting out and searching for jobs and things like that. And we met person after person after person with brain injuries. We met person with concussions. And I would speak about the radio shows that we've done in the past and everything together. And I mentioned you several times and several other people as hosts and everything. And I have three or four of them that want to be radio hosts now. And one of them had so many stripes. I don't remember what his stripes stood for right now, because I talked to so many people today. But it was amazing, him. I mean,
you got to have them call me.
I'm
looking for a couple people.
Mm-hmm. I told them that you especially have a lot of military people on, and that you could go to them and meet you. One man has his own radio show that he has already started, but he doesn't know exactly what direction to go. And I told him, well, back in the early days when Kim and I started around the same time, we experimented a lot. We added music. We did this. We did that. And some stuff would stick and other things would be gone because it didn't work. And he said, thank you. That's encouraged me to really do it. I'm going to look up your show and her show and all that and see what I can find out more. And so,
yeah, you should have him call me, because one thing when you're trying to do something alone for the first time, you know, I told this story the other night, so I won't prolong it, and you know it already, but when we started with the original five hosts or six hosts and Craig was the seventh, you know, he didn't really teach us about how to do the studio and all of that. We were the first year we were like watching a Marx Brothers show. I mean, each of us made every mistake you could possibly make on our learning curve. But we had each other, you know, and that's one thing about a host who's on his own, not really knowing what he's doing or being lost, is that being part of the group can really help get that support to have a good show. I'd be glad to talk to him. Like, I don't know if he's doing it for a job and getting it paid for, or, you know, if he is paying for it,
paying
he doesn't need to if he's
being on his own.
Well, then he might as well come here and not pay.
That's what I was saying. I said, why do that when we've got a network already here where you can do it? I'll see him again tomorrow, more than likely. I got his number. I don't know where I put it because I was gone the whole day. I didn't get home till 8 o'clock tonight. And so if I can find his number, I'll give it to you.
Yeah, just try to remember one way or another, because I think we could be of help to him and he could be of help to us. So that's cool. And it's great that you're doing that, because, you know, blast injuries until they came up with the smoke pits, but still blast injuries were the most common injury in the last 20-year conflict that we were in. And so there's an awful lot of those out there and many undiagnosed. In fact, you said I have a lot of veterans on, and a few weeks ago I had on a guy named Joe Paisano, and he does a very interesting kind of art, but he teamed with Dr. Chris Ann Gordon, who founded an organization called Resurrecting Lives, and they help veterans reintegrate and help them, you know, get their lives back. And Joe is still serving in the Navy, but he does a very interesting kind of art. And you can look up paisano.com or Resurrecting Lives. He's on there too. But the show is just like in the last maybe 5 shows that I did, but it was a really good show. They've put out a film, and pretty soon I'll be able to tell you how to see it. I don't know now. They're shopping a venue for it. But the film has been made, and it won 2 awards already for independent film. And what it's demonstrating is through the eyes of not telling about, like we can talk about here, but a film that is looking at TBI through the eyes of someone who has one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the point for people watching. Yeah, people watching will be able to see what it's like to be inside that person that has the TBI. Like maybe feel that dizziness or that aphasia.
I like that.
That.
If there is a way you can truly say, you know. And one thing I just wanted to share is about today, just real quick. I don't want to stay and keep talking if you don't want to, but this is important. While I was there today, the general that was speaking, he started talking about the wives of people who've been in battle over there in other countries. And he was saying, you know, we talk about the soldiers that have been fighting, but usually the wives or the person that stayed behind, they have serious things like major job losses, depression, all kinds of things, worrying constantly about if their husband or wife is going to be killed. And he said, so we actually have a new program to help the women of the person that's either been injured, and they said blast injuries and brain injuries were the predominant thing just recently until it started changing a bit. But they're working to help more of the women now find jobs, find careers, find better health resources for them. And I just thought that was interesting, because a lot of times the wives or the people that stay behind are not mentioned, and now they are. They're they're trying to do something big about that. Just thought I'd share that.
Well, that's great that they support the families, and I'd probably be able to say, because now we've got women in the military, so they might be helping spouses. It's spouses.
That's what
might not necessarily be a wife, might be a husband. I just want to clarify for the people out there, because
thank
that's
you.
A
I
great.
Thank you. I had to say it.
Well, it's a great idea to help the families, because a lot of times they're the ones that have to carry the weight while that person is mending, healing, finding their way, the survivor, and they don't know how, the spouses don't know how to go about doing that, because their partner's been the one to do it, and suddenly they can't, and so the load falls on the family. So I'm glad the military is addressing that now, instead of just deploying people off and they're coming back. And, you know, just like everybody on the outside in the civilian world getting pill-pelted, in the military for the most part, and the families haven't been addressed. That's been a very difficult.
It's pretty awesome hearing that.
Way. Yeah. Very awesome. Well, I hope that he's got the ability to disseminate that program around the country to all of the bases, or share that information with the other bases. In fact, it would be interesting if you go back there. He may be too busy to do that, but if there's someone who could speak to that program, I think it would be nice to have them on as a guest, only to talk about that program, so that these spouses would know the help is there. And
that's why I wanted to tell
if
you
it's
that
not available,
it.
No, I think that's really important, and I appreciate it, because, you know, say here, for example, we've got a big base. If they're not doing that here, for example, then people that would hear it on this show about what they're doing in South Carolina might bring the link to the base here and say, why aren't you doing something like this? Or address it nationally, you know, with legislators about implementing that kind of a program across the board for our military, and do it in one
fell
swoop
like that.
I'll look
and see what information I can find for you.
That would be very cool. So, have you been doing? Oh, good. Well, I just wondered. I haven't seen you doing shows. Are you not doing shows?
I haven't been. I have been so physically out of it for the longest time. I'm finally in good shape, I believe. I've had the worst headaches of my life. I mean, it's been so bad that I've been barely able to work at times. And now we've repositioned what I do at work. I work in a different building, actually. I work in a brand new building that's in Augusta, Georgia. I'm there most of the time, not all the time. I'm working with Career Boost all the time. Remember me talking about Career Boost? That helps students with disabilities. Well, I'm primarily on that now, and that has helped me balance out, because I felt like I was juggling too many different things at one time. And I love doing what I'm doing now, and I'm working with some really awesome people. And a couple of them are brain injury survivors, by the way. And so I'm working with one lady that's a wounded warrior herself, a different one that you haven't met before. And she's wonderful. She's from New York, and I was working with her a long time today. And so we were there representing Walton Options at this major event. I mean, there'll probably be 1,000 people there tomorrow when we go back. Easily, probably a lot more than that coming through. So it's going to be a very big event on this very large base. We got lost on it. We drove for several miles going the wrong way because we couldn't find a way around it, and had to ask people to help us.
Yeah,
out.
That can be. Challenging, I know. Well, if you do make it a point to remember, because I hadn't seen you be there, and you are the second and fourth Tuesday, there's, you know, if you found someone that you work with or that you meet in this case who even wanted to do one of those Tuesdays, if you think you'd be coming back and doing shows at all.
I'm ready to do it right now. I really am. I've been fired up. This entire week, I've been talking with people with brain injuries everywhere. And I've even had people call me and say, Les Paul, I don't hear you on Brain Injury Radio. What's going on? I said, I haven't been able to come back. I've just been overwhelmed. I didn't want to come back. Do I sound excited and like I feel better now, finally? I got super sick right after the last time I was on, and it lasted like a month. I was super sick. It wasn't COVID, but I thought it was at first. I stayed so sick so long. And so it really, I said, you know what? I think I've done too much. I've overcooked my everything. I need to just focus on my work right now and resting at home and getting feeling better. And finally it's happened. And so I'm ready to come
good.
Back. Ready?
Well, I hadn't filled those slots, but I was getting ready to, just because we've had blank slots running on Tuesdays, you know, and
I know.
So on, at least on the second and fourth Tuesday. So, yeah, I think that would be great if you did, or great. I do have another night on a Thursday. I can't tell you which one, but if you do find, like this gentleman you were talking about, if you think he would be a good fit, you know, with the team and the network, if you can put us in touch with each other or anyone else that you're seeing. You know, with me, the way it's worked is it's normally me just talking to someone, usually a guest, but if I was face-to-face with people like you are, you can kind of get a feel about whether that person would make...
You would have been a smorgasbord today. You would have loved it.
Yeah, I would have been all over them, you know, testing their radio voice and their schedules.
You know what my problem was? All of a sudden, when I start telling about Brain Injury Radio, I have a general come up to me, which made me nervous, and say, you do what on a Brain Injury Radio show? I said, I don't even know if I can get back on right now because I haven't done one in months. But I'm willing to try and do whatever, but I'm telling you about Kim Justice. I was writing down names and handing things out to people for so many different things on Brain Injury Radio we've done over the years, and they were taking notes. Walt Nopson's had a table set up at this huge event. It was huge. And military people were coming in looking for jobs for ones who are leaving the military, looking for jobs for their family members. And they even gave away a brand new car while we were there, too. I'm like, wow, okay. And
wow.
It's a big, big, beautiful base. It's amazing. It's where iCyber Command is there. I know you have the, what is the military thing? You have the jets and all that stuff. I can't say it.
Stratcom.
Cyber Command. Stratcom.
We have the buttons. They're, it is an Air Force base, but they're the buttons.
Well,
in fact,
my brother Eddie,
I was just watching a thing. I was just watching a thing on the news that it makes me want to slap people on the news sometimes that said we would be a target if it came to that because of one of the things that we do here. And I thought, great, tell the whole frickin' world, why don't you? Especially when they're sending balloons, you know, from China across the country.
I know, that made me so mad about that Chinese crap our president let go through. That was so stupid. That's another story.
I know. I know. Yeah, some night, we only got 20 minutes, but some night we'll have to talk about that. We used to have some talk about that because we're coming back into, you know, campaign season, and obviously they're talking a lot about it, and it's so weird when you first came on and you talked about it seemed like the world was crazy. It's like now people aren't really talking, politicians aren't so much talking about their platform as
they're not
poking holes in their competition's platform. And we got one president who is getting indicted and another sitting president who needs to be impeached. And I'm like, really? This is the best we've got now, you know? I mean, obviously, they've tried 59 times on our former president. And, you know, if the best minds, you know, this is the best they can do at this point, then that's pretty pathetic. But, you know, they did wind up getting Capone in the end on taxes, so you never know. But, you know, bribery and treason is another thing from a sitting president who did the exact same thing, took documents, classified documents, but wasn't in a position to do that. Only the president can do that. A vice president isn't allowed to do that, and nor are they allowed to take $10 million from the Chinese. And now you wonder why a balloon made it all the way across the country. How many jets do we have on all those bases that could have taken out that balloon before it
and
even got
they let it fly
to our shores?
That's crazy.
That's what I mean. They knew it was coming. It wasn't like Pearl Harbor. They knew it was coming way out there. You know, it should have never even made it to our shores before we took it out.
Yeah.
But it didn't. That's why it makes it more believable, you know, that money was taken for favors or to look the other way when things like that happen, because otherwise it's just plain malfeasance, you know, that you're not taking care of. I mean, I thought that's what they were there for, is to take care of the interest, protect our country, you know,
and
between the borders
said,
and the balloons and go on.
This is why I said earlier that I think the brain injury survivors and the people with disabilities need to take over the country and become presidents, vice presidents, all the other leaders, because I think we have a lot more sense, even with our brain injuries, even with dementia. Even, I mean, our president, well, I don't know what he has, but I mean, you know what I mean?
Well, you know what he did have, and I said this from the very beginning, and you just are a great example of it, because we were talking about you doing a twice-a-month radio show and how long it's been that you've been on to do 2 hours worth of work two times a month. Now, I said before our president ever became president, I knew that he had had two aneurysms at different times. Now, what I said was he might be the nicest guy in the world, but he's not going to have the energy to run a country day in, day out for 4 years without folding like a house of cards. And at his age, unfortunately, we're finding more and more in studies that our brain injuries of today can lead to a degenerative brain disease of tomorrow, say at his age.
Yeah.
So perhaps his two brain bleeds have now not only had the residual outcomes that our aneurysms had, but he could be moving into even worse territory at this time. And so I'm not quite sure, you know, that's another thing that just makes you think about politics, you know, the bad. Well, but, you know, and I'm not saying that we couldn't get a job and work. I know the hell that you went through getting a job, but not to be president. I think it's important that we also know our limitations. You know, if we can't make it 2 hours two times a month, how could we do, a president must put in 12 hours a day, 7 days a week practically. I mean, especially with all the stuff that's going on right now. Well, yeah, I don't think he puts in any, whoever it was that got him in office under those circumstances. The other thing I think is really cruel is their spouse. You know, when you live with someone and you know because you live with them and you still push them out in the spotlight, you know, to fall down, to not be able to find their way off stage, to be working with what's her name, number two. I can't even say it, but you know, the people that knew, I understand why the son didn't know, because he's smoking crack making porn movies, and that is a very time-consuming pursuit, you know, but the wife, for God's sake, she lives with the man. She didn't think that this might be taxing and harmful to him, to try to put that much brain that was already vulnerable. I'm all for us being employed and getting jobs, and maybe there's someone who's 30 who maybe didn't have as severe of a brain injury, you know, that makes it to be president. But when you're 80-something and you've had two aneurysms, you know, we're a little younger than that, and it exhausts us to do what we do. And when that happens, then we can start making mistakes. And when we do what you just said, which we've both done, and everybody I know here has done, and that is said yes when we should have said no. Yes, because it is definitely a function we can do.
Yeah.
But said yes to all of the asks. And the problem there is that no, any individual one of those things, hell yeah, we could do that. But doing all 10 of them, no. You know, then we start making mistakes or suffering physically with headaches, with neuro fatigue, not remembering things, misspelling words like I did tonight in my program notes, and I have for the last couple weeks, you know, stuff like that starts happening. So I think, you know, we need to reasonably know our limits, and somebody should have been knowledgeable enough to know the limits that the president would be faced with. So I don't blame him as much as some of the people around him. You know, to allow him to be embarrassed and to undermine the confidence the rest of the world has in our leadership. You know,
I know it's easy.
It just seems like a good time to try whatever one would want to try, because we've been pretty slow on the uptake.
I don't know, but I might run for president next week. Won't you vote for me? I'm playing with you. I'm an aneurysm survivor. Yay. That'd be silly. I don't know. He does so many unusual, odd things that I've never seen anybody do before. And I'm not talking about any of the main ones you've seen on television. It's just on an average daily basis. He'll say things like dog face pony soldier. I'm like, what? That were words he actually used on television. He called the person a dog face pony soldier. They've got video of him saying, I watched it. I'm like, what the heck?
Must be an old saying or something. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. But, yeah, that's pretty weird.
I know.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think it's pretty weird. I'll get off him for a minute, since we only got 10 minutes left, and just say that it is a bizarre situation when the two leaders – no, I'm glad that you did. My guest left after an hour, and I was going to make the show early, but I'm sure everyone is really happy to hear from you and is wondered where you've been, and it also gave me the content for the second hour. So thank you.
Thank you for having me on. I really am back. I've done a lot of things, rethinking, working differently, hanging around with different people that are really special people, and working out, doing all kinds of crazy stuff that's working really good. So my energy's back, my headaches are less, and I'm ready to come back if you want me.
Well, sure. Even if you did an hour, or you found not a strange co-host, I know that hasn't always worked and it has a bad taste in your mouth, but I found too that, you know, Simon's been with me probably 6 years, 5 years now, maybe,
mm-hmm.
on the last Wednesday of each month, and Karen's been with me maybe 2 years on the second Wednesday of each month. And I do find it helpful because the rest of the time I have guests that I've found. And
yeah.
One thing that's helpful, because you didn't have as many guests necessarily, you do good with coming out with a topic and just talking for X amount of time. But, you know, when you have a co-host for one of the days, what I like is that they bring me topics.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Like Karen will come to me and say, what do you think about this, 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 or this? And she spits out like four different topics. Well, that just saved me the time and trouble of thinking about it, because I'll look at her for four choices and go, bang, that one looks like a good one. Let's do that. And it might be something I know
okay.
about already, or at least it gives me a direction, and I go Google an article or two, and she's already done her homework on these things. And so
and that sparks your brain to thinking things too, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's really mm-hmm. helpful to have a second
yeah.
hand. You know, it's not that, and I've explained to people before, you know, as long as I've been here, you know, 13 years actively working every Wednesday, I've tried many kinds of formats just to keep it interesting and to mix
mm-hmm.
it up a little. I haven't always had co-hosts. I haven't always had guests I've been interviewing every week. In the beginning, I came off the cuff like you did and talked and thought about it. And then
mm-hmm.
I thought, well, one of the things I like to do, and not everybody... Well, thanks. Not everybody would like to do it that way, because they have, in sales, we used to call it call reluctance. I love to have a day where I go on LinkedIn and I go shopping for people. I read their bios, and if there's something that is interesting to me, I reach out to the person. And I'm not afraid for them to say no. I don't take that personally. A lot of people do. They're afraid, you know, to reach out and make, and there's nothing wrong with that. If they've got other
mm-hmm.
ways of finding content, that's good. It's good that we have a mix of different kinds of programs on Brain Injury Radio, but, you know, I don't get told no very often, because it's 2 hours of free advertising live
yeah.
and then on demand. And I put in tapes when I'm not here, and I usually go back. I put in one from 2015 the other night. I wanted to make it before COVID. You know,
mm-hmm.
a lot of talk was about COVID from 2020 on, you know, so
yeah.
I wanted to go back to what would be a regular topic pre-COVID. So
okay.
I had... I had to be gone for a couple weeks, and I found one from 2013 and one from 2015, and they were great shows, great guests. So it's not only that they're live on demand, but they also get featured again sometimes when a host who
exactly.
can't be on loads one of their old tapes. And so that makes it a lot easier to procure guests, because they would pay thousands and thousands of dollars to get 2 hours plus in free
yeah.
advertising to get their
exactly.
name out there. So we all do it different ways. But anyway, I'm going to close out with a tune, and well, I bet I won't be able to find that, but I guess it will be Simon Says week next week. I can't believe the last week of June already. But as long as Les was talking about it, I am going to play a song by a veteran, Dave Bray, B-R-A-Y. You can find him at Dave Bray USA, and the song is called Warrior, which we appreciate from our veterans, but we also have to have a lot of warrior in us to get through this brain injury thing. So thanks for stopping in, Les, and I
hope
to talk to you soon about being on the show or a new host for maybe Thursday, and thanks for what you do. And I'm going to flip over because we've got 3 minutes left. This is Dave Bray with Warrior, and I want to thank my first hour guest, again, Dr. Noah St. John. Good night and God bless everyone. Have a good week.
Our musical guest today served in the U.S. Navy and Marines and has dedicated much of his musical career to supporting veterans and active duty military. Today, he's singing an uplifting patriotic tune he wrote for those men and women in our studio sessions. Here's Dave Bray of York with his song, Warrior Inside.
Thank you. I'm a warrior in